Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the second guest show. Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and visit. We've got a great crowd here tonight celebrating a little Labor Day and kind of, for some people, kind of the last of the summer days off until we hit hopefully a little bit of cool weather, a little bit of fall weather. So Bob and I will be on until 8 o'clock tonight. Bob, let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Let's go to Lester in Mandeville. Lester, you in the huddle with Bobby and Mike.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, Lester?
Hey, how Lester. Y'all
doing? All right, sir.
Hey, man, listen, man, you know, I was watching the game last night, and, you know, the play calling early in the game, it seemed it went to Lacy and Taylor a lot, and then in the second half it just seemed that it wasn't targeted much, you know, and then, you know, I just didn't understand the play calling. And one time I saw on TV, I saw in the booth, it was an argument or something. Somebody was screaming in the mic or something like that and saying, and then one of the coaches had to slap the guy, tell him to shut up and things. And could it be
he's probably telling him, you're on TV. I mean, you got to watch. Because, oh, man, they dog cuss each coaches and
that happens on every sideline.
The public just don't see that.
Well, but it happens all the time. College and pros.
It was not enough targeting, you know, the same plays in the second half.
Because USC made adjustments. Okay, USC made adjustments.
Coach Lynn bracketed. I watched what they did to Kyren.
Yes.
Okay, it was like, okay, enough's enough. They're feeding him the ball every down. Come on, you got to stop it. So they had, Bob, what you would say, over and under with him.
It could be in and out. It could be over and under. Like, no, you can it's all like you playing chess. I don't know if you play chess. But anyone, I'm not on that level. That's one thing. T-Bob always tells me this when we talk about how chess is the greatest invention in the history of the world. When you look at, like, strategy and how are you trying to combat your opponent and what are you doing, it might not work out at the beginning. Okay, what are you going to do to adjust? And I think you got to give Lincoln Riley credit that
and DeAnton Lynn on defense.
Yes, the halftime adjustments, the whole staff, what are they doing? Because, you know, a normal fan will just see like a receiver basically having 100 yards in the first half. Well, he should have 100 yards the second half. He should have an unbelievable game. You don't think the defense is going to make adjustments? And then you don't want to just force the ball. If you Nussmeier, if you discipline and how you going to read the coverage and what they're doing, so other players are going to have an opportunity when you pass in the football. So that's why a lot of fans are like, oh, well, why did he stop throwing to Lacy? Well, I think the coverage dictated that. Now you could say, well, to hell with the coverage, because I've been there before with Andre Rison.
I was going to say, explain that. Some guys, you just got to throw them the ball.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're getting that opportunity. Not like always, but certain things, you know where it would have been a case in point? In the red zone. LSU's offense was El Succo in the red zone.
Yes, it was.
You know, you can move the ball, but you get in the red zone because you look at the matchups. It's like almost like an alley-oop. There might be certain plays that I like my guy better than your guy. But the one thing a lot of LSU fans don't realize, even though USC's defense sucked, they didn't suck in the secondary. USC's overall, if you look at their secondary.
They got some players in the secondary.
Yes. So that's what I'm saying. So when you look at the matchups, that all comes into play. So when you just say, oh, you got this unbelievable receiver, and we're just going to throw them the ball no matter what the coverage is. No, that's not realistic. Teams don't do that.
But, Bob, in essence, if you're going to play an over and an under with that guy, then that frees up somebody else. That guy's got to get open.
Right, and Mike, now Taylor, you look at the tight end position. Now, didn't you notice, like, a few times, even with the running backs, where it looked like it was kind of blocked. But USC did not look soft. I'm not saying they were knocking a snot bubble. When they went, when you say like, okay, are you tackling well or you're not? It was like, boom. And then they went, LSU's player went down. And it might have been a 4 or 5 yard gain. I was like, man, I thought that was going to be a 15, 20 yard gash. So how do you tackle? You're going to see this on Sunday, on Thursday night when the NFL starts.
Even one big shot with Caleb Jackson, who is a 230-pound runner. Now, I understand with Josh. Josh isn't a big guy. So, if you sometimes with those hits, he's going to go down. But Caleb is a different story. Caleb looked like he was getting hit by everybody in some of those
shots. I don't even know his name. And I might have the number wrong. I don't know why this number's in my head. Number two for USC. I don't even know who that cat is. But a couple of tackles that I witnessed, I was like, whoa. When he hits somebody, not necessarily he knocked them backwards, but they didn't go forward.
They were sideways shots.
They were down.
Yeah.
And Jalen Smith. Whoever that cat is, I was like, whoa. No, that dude can tackle.
Now, we sort of talked about it last week. Boy, if he could have brought Latu with him from UCLA. But, man, you think about how good UCLA's defense. And that's not noted about USC defensively, how good. But if you watched them play last year, man, they could play defense. Now, their offense was matzah, but their defense was really good last year with Deontay.
And, you bring up UCLA, the defensive coordinator left, now went to USC. UCLA is not very good. We're going to play them at Tiger Stadium. Charlie, who did they just beat? Was it UC Irvine?
Hawaii.
No, Hawaii. Yeah. It's Hawaii.
And they were losing 10-0 at half.
What, it was like a 4 or 5 point win? I mean, come on. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on. So when I look at, UCLA is coming to town. Now it's a prestigious name, a big name and all that. And
Never been there.
Never been to
Tiger Stadium.
Tiger Stadium, yeah. But no, USC is a different banana than USC right now. That could be. I'd be disappointed if it's not a double-digit win easily for LSU against UCLA.
Let's go back to our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Big Cheesy. Big Cheesy in the huddle with Bobby and Mike.
How y'all doing, fellas?
Hi, Big Cheesy. How you been, brother?
I'm all right. I'm doing good. I want to touch on a number of things. So I'm going to be real quick. Mike, I remember when the draft came around, we was talking about Penning, and I wanted to go with Malik. When my man got traded to Green Bay, I think we need to trade Joe Boyd to somebody. We need to get rid of Penning. We need a right tackle. I seen a game last night. I'm just going to say our cornerbacks are real small. Those guys that Moss was throwing the ball to was 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", plus. I think they was just too tall.
Tight end.
I'm not on the hype train to get.
They got actually a tight end that they moved to receiver.
I'm not on the hype train to get rid of Brian Kelly. I want to keep him. I'm on the hype train of getting rid of Billy Napier. I watched the Florida Gators game all the way to the fourth quarter. I think they came out very lethargic. Until like third quarter, until the long way guy came in. And my thing is this, Mike, if he was the number one quarterback coming out of high school last year, then why wait till the third quarter to put him in the game and get the first touchdown? I don't understand.
I don't get it either.
It looks like he's going to play this weekend because he's in the concussion protocol.
Yeah, with Graham Mertz down.
So he's
going to get his chance.
He's going to play this weekend.
Here's the thing about it. Your offensive line at Florida is not good. You better get a movement guy. Graham Mertz is not going to move around that pocket. And, man, the one thing with the U, I give them credit. They physically beat them up in that game. Beat them up front. And then Cameron Ward, and, man, I've seen him since his days at Incarnate Word. Then he goes to Washington State, and he thought about coming out early for the draft. He got a situation where he would have been a late-round pick. So he decides to go one more year in school at Miami, and look what he's cashed in. Man, Cameron Ward can play.
Yeah, he just keep doing what he's doing, and the proof's in the pudding what he's going to do. But – you know, when Mertz, when he got knocked out, he got the concussion, they were like, oh, that's roughing the passer.
What?
I don't know. He got tackled. He got tackled hard, so why is that roughing the passer? I mean, you can protect the quarterbacks, but that was nothing.
Only to a certain extent. That didn't look like the
run. No, and then, but they were like, oh, no, you can't hit the quarterback anymore? Come on.
This ain't two-hand touch or flag football. But it's almost being played like that. Bob, you could still be playing if they had them same rules. We'll be back with more Second Guess and Blake Ruffino from the Are You Serious Sports Network covering the LSU Tigers will join us right after this break on the Big 870 WWL.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on the Second Guest Show, Mike DeTillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and visit us. Bobby J and I will be here until 8 o'clock tonight. On our Oakland Hard Jewelers talk and text line, we got Blake Ruffino from the Are You Serious Sports Network covering LSU. Blake, man, things are hot in the city tonight. So, first of all, thanks for joining us on Labor Day. Glad to have you on. And Bob and I were talking about this earlier, that the disappointment, the inability to run the football, this was supposed to be the strength of this football team up front. And to be honest with you, they did a solid job in pass protection, but they got sort of pushed around up front. No holes. Now, John Emery got a couple of nice runs, and I was so glad to see John contribute. He had told me in the summer, he said, I'm going to make an impact. Game one. I was like, man, I hope so, John. And he came through. Also, to the penalties. And to have basically 100 yards worth of penalties, the two, man, 15-yarders from the veterans on the team, you know, from Kyron Lacy. And I think at this point you could hear the frustration, and you hear it today. And, Blake, will you hear it tonight when you do your podcast? This game laid right in the lap of the offense.
No question, Mike. I think you're spot on when you talk about the penalties. You know, 99 yards and penalties isn't good. You know, Mike, but I think you're right in reference to running the football. But not only that, I mean, Mike, let's look at the second half as it was told. LSU's defensive possessions, the first four defensive possessions they had in the second half, they forced a three and out, they allowed a field goal, they had another three and out, and then the fourth time they came in was the Savion Jones when he batted the ball in the air and almost got picked off on fourth down. Mike, four straight drives that you only get 7 points. And not only that, you're in the red zone or the 15-yard line, with inside the 15-yard line, and you only get 6 points when you're in there three times. Those are the things that kill you. You know, like those things will beat you 10 times out of 10 if you're not careful. Mike, and I went back and watched it today, and look, I'm not saying I'm a film junkie or anything like that. The second half, when you had the inability of running the football, you kept coming in tight on your offensive formations, and they would have eight guys in the box. Like, throw the football. If they're going to put that many people in there, throw the football. But, Mike, I don't know anymore, man. I mean, the lack of execution in the second half offensively, I thought, stunted you. And you just can't get only 6 points when you get in the red zone three times like that.
Three. Bob?
You know, and when you look at it, the ebbs and flow and how the game's going to unfold. And I thought overall, even though you look at Moss, I guarantee he's going to be one of the best quarterbacks they face this year. He was 26 to 36 for 378 yards. But he looked just so poised. I thought Nussmeier looked poised. And then you look at always look at it. I don't think it's the same song and dance if you look at it under Blake Baker. We gave up, again, a ton of big plays, 12 or 15 yards or more. 12 of the 15 yards or more was 284 yards. And then I'm looking at the average roughly like 11 yards completion in the first half. But they were making unbelievable catches. So I'm saying we might watch the rest of the season and we'll see that those kind of plays made by the receivers and what the quarterback did.
No doubt. And Bobby, I think that that's what they beat you in. Were you at times offensively or a little bit more methodical in your scoring drive? They weren't methodical. I mean, let's look at the first half and their first touchdown. They had a play for 17 yards to the tight end, a 19-yard screen to Zachariah Branch, and then a 24-yard catch, the ridiculous catch, the one-handed catch by Kyron Hudson. I mean, that's not methodically moving the ball down the field. I mean, that's big chunk gains. And they did that on you all night. Now, that's got to get cleaned up defensively. But if I would have came on the show last week and said, hey, you know what, defensively you would hold them 3-9 on third down, 0-1 on fourth down, and you would hold them to 69 yards rushing. Guys, think about this. Lincoln Riley is 1-11 in games where he doesn't have over 100 yards rushing as a head coach. 1-11. His only win is yesterday versus LSU. You held him to 69 yards. Those are the small things. Like those big chunk plays, they were making plays, and you knew that they could. They were a really good unit. And just, again, when you're getting off the field that much, you got to go get points. You got to go put the game away. They're going to have offensive weapons. We knew that going into it. But as Mike mentioned earlier, too, when you can't establish a running game, I think it's a big deal. You know, that little toss play they kept going to that John had back-to-back 8-yard runs on. Back-to-back. Why are you not – if you're getting at them on the edge, why are you not attacking them on the edge? I'm not the person to call people out. It's not my job. But there are some things to be said that when your offensive inefficiencies, when you're getting that many stops, it can be very crucial. And then the momentum changes when they come out. And the second-to-last touchdown that they had, you go 3-and-out, and they go 2 plays in the touchdown. Like, those are the kinds of things that get you beat, too.
You know, and Blake, and again, I thought Nussmeier, I mean, he was poised to me from the get-go. I mean, he looked like he wasn't overwhelmed. I think both quarterbacks looked like, because, you know, I always say you never want to be the man to replace the man. When you think about
the moccasins, those two guys
yeah,
have to walk in.
Jane Daniels and Caleb Williams, I don't know. To me, they were fine. I mean, how both of them, they seem poised. But one player, I think Nussmeier freaked out. I don't know why. I mean, he's going to the right. Remember, the Tigers reached the red zone, which they sucked in the red zone.
That was one
And
bad
they gained
pass.
2 yards really on three bad. Plays after two incompletions. I mean, what happened on that play? I mean, I think we might have scored or we'd have been close, but, you know, we ended up settling for a 31-yard field goal. But I thought that was the right play, right design. And I think that's why
it was just a bad pass.
I think he was freaked out how open he was.
I agree. I was going to say, I think he was surprised he was that open.
No, it was like, I was like, whoa, what did he just do? I was like flabbergasted. And they never showed the replay on TV. I'm like, no, that was like, what did he just do? I mean, he's been playing, making the throws you need to make. That's like, you can make that in seventh grade or something.
Well, not even that, too, on that play, too. I know you're talking about the one with Aaron Anderson out in the flat. The ball it gets landed at his feet.
Yeah.
You got cushion on the outside on Kyron Lacy, too. And that's a whole other discussion that we're going to have tonight. How in the good googly moogly in the second half on two throwaways, which the target is considered to go to Kyron Lacy, when he has 7 catches in the first half, do you not get your playmaker the football? You know, we went into this game saying that Nuss needed to be a little bit more conservative and not turn the football over. Guys, 24 passing attempts were 10 yards or less. 24. That's too conservative. Now, I get that Chris is not, you know, Chris Hilton's not out there, and you don't maybe have a guy that can hit him deep. But for good goodness sake, I mean, Kyron's not getting stopped. And I think that even that pass, even the pass before that, Bobby, I mean, you're not getting him in the right situations on some of these. But then when you do get him in the right situation, you're not able to execute too. So, look, Garrett missed a couple of big ones. But, I mean, like last night, I mean, to start of the game, he was 12 of 14. I mean, he ended the first half, I think it was, 15 of 19 or 15 out of 18? I mean, the kid was incredible from his timing aspect. It's just, you know, I don't know, man. I really don't. But not getting Kyron the ball in the second half too really hurt you.
You know, and Blake, when I look at it, obviously I think Coach Kelly says we got to coach better. Well, hell yeah. Much is given, much is required. The same thing with Lincoln Riley. I think Lincoln Riley, this might be his most significant win he's had since he's been at USC.
You know, the toughest
and being on the hot seat
he ever played, I think, was against Houston. Man, most of these opening games for Lincoln, if it was at Oklahoma or at USC, were not tough games. And that his game plan along with Lynn's game plan, it worked. And the surprising part for USC was how effective they were on defense. They really did. I'm not saying they loaded on defense talent-wise. Now, their secondary's good.
Well,
but their front seven, that surprised me how well they played in that game, Blake.
Blake, you look at total defense, like Mike's saying, total defense or run defense, like you're 115 around there. I mean, you think LSU's defense was bad last year. USC was worse.
Which is hard to believe.
I don't know. I think we got our coach.
I think that's correct.
Yeah, and look, another thing De'Anthony Lynn did too, man. Go back. I mean, look, stacking the box the way that he did and disguising it, right? Like, I mean, he disguised run plays. Everything that he did was by design. And I think that, look, we talk about being our coach. You have a first-time true play caller without Skip, and that is Joe Sloan versus the guy in De'Anthony Lynn, who, I mean, guys, let's just be honest. I mean, he won that battle. And that, I mean, I'm not trying to put a loss on Sloan. I'm not doing that. But I'm just saying, like, that's where you got out coached too. He knew what he had to do going into this.
The things defensively, they were aggressive. You saw that part of Blake Baker, and I think that'll be part of this defense. And the one thing I do agree with Coach Kelly is that, hey, listen, you got warts on defense. That's sometimes you're not going to be able to just put them right back out, three and out, three and out, three and out, and put them back out on the field. They go get exploited. I think why a lot of people are pointing the finger at the defense is the last thing you remember, the last two drives. Blake, I think a lot of people, because that's stuck in their mind of what you saw in the last two drives where Moss was unbelievable throwing the football. He didn't have a lot of pressure on him, and he sort of carved you up at the end of that game. But for 3.5 quarters, had you told me that this team would have been 10-10 at halftime, I'd have never believed you. Never believed that.
Well, and here's another thing, Mike. We talked about this to start off the segment. Four straight drives, they got 3 points in 20 minutes. The last things that Miller Moss did was in the last 5 minutes of the football game, right? Like, time of possession, because you had a three and out that went into there. I mean, look, for 20 straight minutes in the second half, they shut them down. Like, that's not Savion Jones, heck of a game. Absolutely elite in what he was doing. But, I mean, again, four straight drives to start off giving up 3 points. Mike, not only would I take that, you know who else would take that? Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams last year. You want to talk about national title contention? Those teams wish that they had that last year too. But they, I mean, look, they sent pressure after them all night. And I thought even the Savion Jones first sack, the plays made by Savion, go back and watch it. A lot of people on Major Burns today, when they sent Major off the edge, he made some critical plays in reference to containing Miller Moss that got Savion into the mix on those sacks. Those were some crucial plays, but Blake's not going to sit on his laurels here. But, Mike, I got to say one thing. I thought safety play was a little bad, you know, at times, and I think they got to clean that up. They got some talented freshmen back there. I don't know if they don't need to, you know, maybe start looking at some guys on the freshman side of things at safety, because, look, things got a little dicey at times at that position.
Blake, you and I have talked about it. It won't be long before those two young kids will be playing. And I'm not talking about as a backup. I'm talking about potential starters. I think they've almost seen enough to say, you know what, we can't match up well downfield. We're going to go with the young kids.
Well, and you know, Blake.
Deshaun Spears is 10 times more athletic than Gilbert. And I hate to say it like that, but, man, when he came out of the game, they threw a fade route, and Deshaun Spears almost, if he was, you know, if the ball would have been thrown, he had a chance to make a play there. So those are the small things, Mike. I know it's just a play, but, I mean, you got to get better play from the safety position. And here's another thing, too. The McCree kid, the tight end from USC, 5 catches last night, all came on third down. Okay? You had one-on-1 safety versus tight end. They came on third down. So those are critical things that in coverage, you got to get a safety that can cover tight end, because you know who's going to be licking their chops when they see that. It's Lane Kiffin. And you got them in a couple weeks, too.
You know, Blake, when I look at you know, like we excited when our defense comes up with a stop and you want the momentum. And I'm looking at LSU punted on three of their five possessions after halftime. I'm like saying, okay, I'm thinking maybe, okay, I'm not saying we got to be perfect, but punt one time, but three times on five possessions? No, come on. Now, I was disappointed in that. And obviously, you look at our special teams, nothing to write home about. And, you know, I was like, when you're a little worried about this, a different topic now, I'm talking about, you know, what do you do in the possessions, the five possessions after halftime. But all of a sudden, I'm worried about, what's his name, Mike? He has a Zacharias?
Yeah, Zacharias.
I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, he's taking it to the house. I was like,
my thing is, don't kick it to him.
No, and then I was almost falling on my chair. I'm watching this, and I'm squirming, and I was like, oh, thank God we saw. I mean, but when you think about all what occurred there, I mean, it's like we need any opportunity that we can have to help us out. But I thought that was interesting that that we punted three of the five possessions after halftime and didn't have any kind of momentum against that USC defense.
Well, not only that, buddy. To your point, think about this: when you punted or kicked off to him, okay, and you had the penalty, and they got that long run back, you held them to a field goal there. By the way, they started on your own 40. So the kid's explosive. I mean, the screen plays, what did he have, guys? I'm sorry. The intern said he had three screen plays that went for how long? 63 yards. That kid's good, man. That kid's good.
He's not the biggest cat in the world, but, man, does he put the lump in your throat if you're a coach having to go against him. Blake, I know you got a roll. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I do know one thing. You will have a lively podcast tonight.
Hey, fireball is going to be rolling up in there tonight.
And Blake, when you think about it, we could kick Nichols is behind, Nichols State.
In South Carolina.
And then you're going on the road at South Carolina. You know, LSU fans, you know what they tell me? Are we going to be all right next couple of weeks? And they look at, starting SEC play, South Carolina, what'd they beat Old Dominion? About 4 or 5 points? Old Dominion?
Less than a touchdown.
Yeah. I know that.
So when you,
yeah. So, the challenge is going to be whether they lost or beat USC Ole Miss.
That's the next hurdle down the road. Blake, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. See you soon. Y'all go.
All right.
Blake Ruffino from the Are You Serious LSU Sports Network. We'll be back with our triple option feature right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on the second guest show. Mike DeTillo along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bobby and I will be on until 8 o'clock tonight. Want to tell everybody, hey, if you're in the area, stop on by. You might get lucky. We had two people right in front of us here at the bar. One of them won $1,500. The other one won over $2,400. So,
hello.
Congratulations to. And so that was great. Two nice winners right in front of us. And within 20 minutes of one another. So that
it always pays to come to the Silver Slipper.
That's right. Come on down to the Silver Slipper. It's our triple option feature. And Bob, you go first.
Well, in honor of Charlie Long and UL, the Raging Cajuns, who knows? Billy Napier might end up back in Lafayette. But to my being on the hot seat, and you know, Tom Petty and Florida Gators, they play.
Don't back down.
Don't back down. No, they're backing down. The Canes came in there and whipped that ass. Miami Hurricanes. I think that was the most impressive win over the weekend, when you look at all the games and what occurred. Well, now, I mean,
because of who you played and what it meant to them, and on their turf.
On their turf. That's why on their turf. That's why I think Billy Napier is in trouble.
Big trouble.
Listen, the fans at Florida, it'd be like, now LSU fans might leave in the third quarter because they're trying to beat the traffic if the game's well in hand. Well, the Florida fans were leaving in the third quarter because they were getting their ass whooped. The Hurricanes were whooping them, so they were leaving in the third quarter. So I look at, you know, speculation on Billy Napier. He fell to 11-15. not 15-11, or Mike, you know, they have a winning record, 11-15 in Gainesville, including, you know, it doesn't matter who you beat, including 2-10 against ranked opponents. So he's 2-10 against ranked opponents, and Mike, and Charlie, he's 1-8 against rivals like Miami, Florida State, Georgia, you know, the world's largest cocktail party. So again, 1-8 against Miami, Florida State, Georgia, LSU, and Tennessee.
Yow.
So the Gators lost their sixth consecutive game overall, and they witnessed the end of their 33-game winning streak in home openers. A run that started, you got to go back to Steve Spurrier. When he arrived, Mike, I was still playing in the NFL in 1990. In 1990, you got to go back to the home winning streak to start the season. That didn't happen. Now, Napier has the same. Now, this caught my attention also. Billy Napier has the same number of losses at Florida Field in 2+ seasons. Okay, same number of losses at Florida Field in 2+ seasons, which is 5, as Steve Spurrier had in a dozen years. So, now over a decade, 12 years. So, you know, all of a sudden they talk about the swamp. No, the Florida Gators are getting swamped with Billy Napier. No, they ain't no damn home field advantage in the swamp. Now, it was with Steve Spurrier. So, Charlie, I'm not hating. I'm just spewing the facts.
Come
Charlie,
on, Billy.
It's not going to be the SID at Florida under Billy. I'll put it to you that way. Go ahead, Charlie.
No, I hope he comes back to UL, guys. I mean, I like Coach Dez and all, but, I mean, both programs have kind of seen middling success since that kind of breakup, and I would love to see him come back and coach the Raging Cajuns again, but that's a pipe dream. Guys, I'm going with the Astros starting pitching for my triple option because, you know, Bobby, we always talk about we love history. The Astros in 2024 will finish the month of August with the second lowest opponent batting average for an entire month in MLB history, only behind Cleveland from 1968. The Houston Astros starting pitching had an opponent batting average of 185. Cleveland, though, I mean, they got a pretty good separation there. They were 174, but that is incredible history made from basically almost 60 years ago. The Houston Astros starting pitching staff has just been rolling recently. It's funny, the first ballot Hall of Famer, Justin Verlander, is probably the worst member of the rotation at this point. Spencer Arrighetti, to put a, you know, kind of brighter note on a former Raging Cajun, has been absolutely excellent in August specifically, guys. In 5 starts, and I'll say 5 starts for each of these pitchers, he had a 1.95 ERA and 47 strikeouts and 32 innings pitched. He's not just missing bats, he's striking out guys left and right. But also Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown have kind of become a 1-2 ace punch for this team. And both of those guys in August as well, Framber 1.59 ERA, and then Hunter Brown a 1.45 ERA. They had 3 starting pitchers that went an entire month with a sub-2 ERA. So, guys, you know, we're getting closer and closer to October, and as an Astros fan, I'm getting pretty excited because it feels like this team can go some places based off of their pitching. And, you know, the Yusei Kikuchi pickup, I'm glad that I wasn't on the air when it happened. I was on vacation, but because I wasn't a big fan of the package that they gave up for him. He's been awesome as an Astro. Like, he came over from Toronto. He had a basically just sub-5 ERA with the Blue Jays this year. But in 6 starts with the Astros, the Astros are 6-0 in his starts as well. But he's got a 2.57 ERA. So the Astros tweaked something with him. He's got a 3-0 record in a Houston uniform. And I'm feeling optimistic about this team heading into October pretty soon, guys, because of the starting pitching rotation that they got.
1 month, they have 1 month of the season left.
That's it.
September. So, then you look like, you know, you could be a fan of a team. And you look, you might be a Seattle Mariner fan, but post-All-Star break, what the hell happened? You know, whatever. So, no, you want to peak at the right time, and it seems like that's where the Astros are at right now.
Charlie, I wondered why you was in such a good mood. I thought it might be something else, but this sort of explains it to me.
Well, the Astros were down about 10 games, I believe, back in June, and now they're up 5 games on the Seattle Mariners to kind of highlight that, Bobby. They've just fallen off a cliff. And real quick, because I just love doing this every time we do triple option, an update on the Chicago White Sox, who are chasing history, and the wrong side of history, by the way. They lost today to the Orioles 13-3. They are now 31-108. Guys, they've already broken the franchise record for the most losses in a single season, and they're still, as you mentioned, Bobby, a whole month to play.
Whole month to play, and You know, everyone was like, oh, they're not trying to win. The Oakland A's are going to go to Las Vegas. No, Chicago White Sox.
That dim Trump.
You know, Southside, Chicago. The Cubs been playing tough. No, no, they ain't going to catch the Brewers.
No.
The Brewers have the easiest road when you think about that. But they actually playing maybe opportunity for the best record of whenever you host and not just winning a division. But when I look at the White Sox, whether you know what I think of too? Who was the stud, Charlie? You know, I know you, Mike. You might remember this. Or who was the stud? He was the outfielder, played football, that was drafted. I want to say maybe in the first round by the White Sox. White Sox, the black wide receiver. What was his name? Charlie, it was Chicago White Sox. Somebody will text it and know that.
We'll
get that. Drafted by the Chicago White Sox. I don't think he's even in Major League Baseball anymore. But this is like pulmonary days and all that.
Guys, I thought this would be a tough game for Boston College as tonight they play Florida State. And I know when you catch a team that got beat physically up front, like what Florida State got beat last week.
Again, Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech put it to them. But tonight, Boston College will beat out their starting offensive guard Logan Taylor. He played left tackle for University of Virginia, transferred to Boston College. He won't play tonight. And also, would they consider their top defensive back, Cameron Martinez? He won't play tonight against Florida State. You're catching an angry football team now, and now you're down two starters, one on offense, the other one on the defensive side, the football. Pete Thamel is reporting that it's a kind of late scratch for both of them, but man, that's not good news for Boston College. And Florida State, I would expect it or not, is not going to be in a good mood tonight after the way they got not only beat, they got beat up by Georgia Tech last week.
No, and Charlie, no, come on, you probably on the internet did it.
No,
for Chicago White Sox, LSU, he played center fielder for the Tigers. They were drafted, I want to say, maybe 18 or somewhere out there with the White Sox. He was, I want to say, first rounder. No, he was
We'll get it later.
No, it's frustrating me. He's a brother. I can see his face right now.
We'll be back with more second guests right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Right, we're finishing up here on our number two of the second guest show, live from the Silver Slipper Casino, Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. We got a lot more. We're taking this until 8 o'clock, and it's Jared Mitchell, the guy. He played for both LSU Tiger baseball team and the LSU Tiger football team.
Yeah, he was drafted in the first round by the White Sox.
We're back here on the second guest show, Mike Dettelia, along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino, Beachside, right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bobby and I will be on until 8 o'clock tonight. Want to tell everybody, hey, if you're in the area, stop on by. You might get lucky. We had two people right in front of us here at the bar. One of them won $1,500. The other one won over $2,400. So
hello.
Congratulations to – and so that was great. Two nice winners right in front of us. And within 20 minutes – of one another, so that
it always pays to come to the Silver Slipper.
That's right. Come on down to the Silver Slipper. It's our triple option feature, and Bob, you go first.
Well, in honor of Charlie Long and UL, the Raging Cajuns, who knows? Billy Napier might end up back in Lafayette. But to my being on the hot seat, and you know, Tom Petty and Florida Gators, they play.
Don't back down.
No, they're backing down. The Canes came in there and whipped that ass. Miami Hurricanes. I think that was the most impressive win over the weekend when you look at all the games and what occurred. Well, now, I mean.
Because of who you played and what it meant to them and on their turf.
On their turf. That's why on their turf. That's why I think Billy Napier is in trouble.
Big trouble.
Listen, the fans at Florida, it'd be like, now LSU fans might leave in the third quarter because they're trying to beat the traffic if the game's well in hand. Well, the Florida fans were leaving in the third quarter because they were getting their ass whooped. The Hurricanes were whooping them, so they were leaving in the third quarter. So I look at, you know, speculation on Billy Napier. He fell to 11-15. Not 15-11, or Mike, you know, they have a winning record, 11-15 in Gainesville, including, you know, it doesn't matter who you beat, including 2-10 against ranked opponents. So he's 2-10 against ranked opponents, and Mike and Charlie, he's 1-8 against rivals like Miami, Florida State, Georgia, you know, the world's largest cocktail party. So, again, 1-8 against Miami, Florida State, Georgia, LSU, and Tennessee.
Yow.
So, the Gators lost their sixth consecutive game overall, and they witnessed the end of their 33-game winning streak in home openers. A run that started, you got to go back to Steve Spurrier. When he arrived, Mike, I was still playing in the NFL in 1990. In 1990, you got to go back to the home winning streak to start the season. That didn't happen. Now Napier has the same. Now this caught my attention also. Billy Napier has the same number of losses at Florida Field in 2+ seasons. Okay, same number of losses at Florida Field in 2+ seasons, which is 5. As Steve Spurrier had in a dozen years. So, now over a decade, 12 years. So, you know, all of a sudden they talk about the swamp. No, the Florida Gators are getting swamped with Billy Napier. No, they ain't no damn home field advantage in the swamp. Now, it was with Steve Spurrier. So, Charlie, I'm not hating. I'm just spewing the facts.
Come
Charlie,
on, Billy.
It's not going to be the SID at Florida under Billy. I'll put it to you that way. Go ahead, Charlie.
No, I hope he comes back to UL, guys. I mean, I like Coach Dez and all, but, I mean, both programs have kind of seen middling success since that kind of breakup, and I would love to see him come back and coach the Raging Cajuns again, but that's a pipe dream. Guys, I'm going with the Astros starting pitching for my triple option because, you know, Bobby, we always talk about we love history. The Astros in 2024 will finish the month of August with the second lowest opponent batting average for an entire month in MLB history, only behind Cleveland from 1968. The Houston Astros starting pitching had an opponent batting average of 185. Cleveland, though, I mean, they got a pretty good separation there. They were 174, but that is incredible history made from basically almost 60 years ago. The Houston Astros starting pitching staff has just been rolling recently. It's funny, the first ballot Hall of Famer Justin Verlander is probably the worst member of the rotation at this point. Spencer Arrighetti, to put a, you know, kind of brighter note on a former Raging Cajun, has been absolutely excellent in August specifically, guys. In 5 starts, and I'll say 5 starts for each of these pitchers, he had a 1.95 ERA and 47 strikeouts and 32 innings pitched. He's not just missing bats, he's striking out guys left and right. But also Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown have kind of become a 1-2 ace punch for this team. And both of those guys in August as well, Framber 1.59 ERA, and then Hunter Brown a 1.45 ERA. They had 3 starting pitchers that went an entire month with a sub-2 ERA. So guys, you know, we're getting closer and closer to October, and as an Astros fan, I'm getting pretty excited because it feels like this team can go some places based off of their pitching. And, you know, the Yusei Kikuchi pickup, I'm glad that I wasn't on the air when it happened. I was on vacation, but because I wasn't a big fan of the package that they gave up for him. He's been awesome as an Astro. Like, he came over from Toronto. He had a basically just sub-5 ERA with the Blue Jays this year. But in 6 starts with the Astros, the Astros are 6-0 in his starts as well. But he's got a 2.57 ERA. So the Astros tweaked something with him. He's got a 3-0 record in a Houston uniform. And I'm feeling optimistic about this team heading into October pretty soon, guys, because of the starting pitching rotation that they got.
1 month, they have 1 month of the season left.
That's it.
September. So, then you look like, you know, you could be a fan of a team. And you look, you might be a Seattle Mariner fan, but post-All-Star break, what the hell happened? You know, whatever. So, no, you want to peak at the right time, and it seems like that's where the Astros are at right now.
Charlie, I wondered why you was in such a good mood. I thought it might be something else, but this sort of explains it to me.
Well, the Astros were down about 10 games, I believe, back in June, and now they're up 5 games on the Seattle Mariners to kind of highlight that, Bobby. They've just fallen off a cliff. And real quick, because I just love doing this every time we do triple option, an update on the Chicago White Sox, who are chasing history, and the wrong side of history, by the way. They lost today to the Orioles 13-3. They are now 31-108. Guys, they've already broken the franchise record for the most losses in a single season, and they're still, as you mentioned, Bobby, a whole month to play.
Whole month to play, and You know, everyone was like, oh, they're not trying to win. The Oakland A's are going to go to Las Vegas. No, Chicago White Sox.
That dim Trump.
You know, Southside, Chicago. The Cubs have been playing tough. No, I don't know. They ain't going to catch the Brewers.
No.
The Brewers have the easiest road when you think about that. But they actually playing maybe opportunity for the best record of whenever you host and not just winning a division. But when I look at the White Sox, whether you know what I think up to? Who was the stud, Charlie? Mike, you might remember this. Or who was the stud? He was the outfielder, played football, that was drafted, I want to say, maybe in the first round by the White Sox, the black wide receiver. What was his name? Charlie, was Chicago White Sox. Somebody will text it and know that.
We'll get that.
Drafted by the Chicago White Sox. I don't think he's even in Major League Baseball anymore. But this is like Paul Maneri days and all that.
Guys, I thought this would be a tough game for Boston College as tonight they play Florida State. And I know when you catch a team that got beat physically up front, like what Florida State got beat last week.
Against Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech put it to them. But tonight, Boston College will be out their starting offensive guard, Logan Taylor. He played left tackle for University of Virginia, transferred to Boston College. He won't play tonight. And also, would they consider their top defensive back, Cameron Martinez? He won't play tonight against Florida State. You catching an angry football team now, and now you're down two starters, one on offense, the other one on the defensive side, the football. Pete Thamel is reporting that it's a kind of late scratch for both of them. But, man, that's not good news for Boston College. And Florida State, I would expect is not going to be in a good mood tonight after the way they got not only beat, they got beat up by Georgia Tech last week.
No, and Charlie, no, come on. You probably on the internet,
dude.
Chicago White Sox, LSU, he played center fielder for the Tigers. They were drafted, I want to say, maybe 18 or somewhere out there with the White Sox. He was, I want to say, first rounder. We'll get it later.
We'll
no, it's frustrating me. He's a brother. I can see his face right now.
We'll be back with more Second Guess right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Right, we're finishing up here on our number two of the Second Guest Show, live from the Silver Slipper Casino, Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. We got a lot more. We're taking this until 8 o'clock, and it's Jared Mitchell, the guy. He played for both LSU Tiger baseball team and the LSU Tiger football team.
Yeah, he was drafted in the first round by the White Sox.
They sure could use him right now, guys.
Yeah.
Well, they could use just about anybody. We'll be back right after this news break.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.